I looked at her and tilted my head, confused. Then why aren't you trying to come with me? Because we can't run in there unprepared, with barely any weapons and no idea what we'll be up against, she said. We need a plan. But we can't just leave Blake in there with Ethan, I said, pointing at the portal. The longer he's in there, who knows what's happening to him? If it were me Ethan pulled in there, Blake would have followed in a second.
I would have held him back, just like I did to you, Chris said.
What if it were Kate? I shot back. Although I looked down and pressed my lips together, regretting my words instantly. I'm sorry, I told him, although from the empty look in his eyes, I could tell there was no taking it back. I didn't mean it.
No.
He sighed and ran his hand through his hair.
You did mean it. And I get why you said it. Because if it were Kate, I would try running in there after her too. But I'm sure that one of you would do everything you could to stop me. Because Danielle's right. We need a plan. So,
he rubbed his hands together, looking back and forth at both of us.
What's the plan?
I looked to Danielle, since she was the one who had mentioned coming up with a plan in the first place. Chris did the same. She took a deep breath and stared up at the ceiling, her forehead crinkled as she thought. Darius, Hypatia, and Jason are all back at Darius's, she finally said, refocusing on us. We should go back there and tell them what happened. They have to know more about Kerberos than we do. They'll help prepare us, and we'll get the weapons we need from the training center so we're ready. But how long will that take? I asked. We'll have to get there, tell them the whole story, and then who knows what they'll say or do. Every minute we waste here is more time that Blake's in Kerberos. And every minute that he's in there is another minute when he's in danger.
And it's more time that Ethan has to deliver Medusa's head to the Titans, Chris chimed in. We have to get that head.
I know. Danielle bit her lip, pacing around the cave. She kept crossing in front of the child Cyclops, now a stone statue in the center. His face was twisted in agony, his eyes wide, his mouth open mid-scream. My stomach twisted from looking at him, so I turned away. That Cyclops should have been delivered to the Cyclops' island in the Aegean Sea. Instead, we let Ethan use the creature as a test subject for Medusa's head. The head worked. But then, when our eyes were closed, Ethan grabbed Blake and threatened to turn us to stone if we opened our eyes to try to stop him. I felt like an idiot trusting Ethan when he came back from Australia and said he wanted to help us fight.
What if you asked your dad for help?
Danielle stopped pacing, her eyes focused on me. Apollo? I reached for the sun pendant on my necklace, and she nodded, since of course she meant Apollo, and not my stepdad, Jerry. I don't know, I said, twisting the pendant around my fingers. I've tried to contact him so many times since he sent me the necklace, and it's never worked. I don't think he wants to help us. It was either that, or he just didn't want anything to do with me. Maybe he was so disappointed in me that he'd given up on me. If I felt like an idiot for trusting Ethan, then Apollo probably thought I was an idiot too.
Try one more time, Chris said. It'll only take a few seconds, right? If it doesn't work, we'll figure out something else. But you have the necklace, so it's worth a shot.
Fine, I said. I'll try. But don't get your hopes up. I wrapped my fingers around the pendant and closed my eyes, taking a few deep breaths to get focused. Apollo, I thought, but then I corrected myself. Dad? It felt strange to think of him as that, when I'd never met him. But maybe a personal touch would encourage him to listen to me this time. We, Danielle, Chris, and I, need your help. Ethan just grabbed the head of Medusa and forced Blake to go with him through the portal to Kerberos. He made a deal with Helios where Helios will bring his sister back from Hades and keep him and his family safe in the upcoming war if he delivers Medusa's head to the Titans. He forced Blake with him because he wanted revenge against me for Rachel's death. We want to go into Kerberos to stop him. But we don't have much time, and we don't want to go in unprepared. I know you're busy, but if there's anything you can do to help us, we really need it right now. More than we've ever needed help from you before. Unable to think of anything else to add, I let go of the pendant and opened my eyes. Well? Danielle's hands were on her hips, and she watched me expectantly. Before I could answer, an orb of light as bright as the sun filled the room. It was so intense that I had to shield my eyes and turn away. After a few seconds, the light faded. Figuring it was safe to look, I lowered my hand, turning back to where the light had been. Standing in its place was a man as tall as a model, with a lean, sculpted body and hair as blonde as mine. In tight jeans, a casual blazer, and a designer scarf, he looked like he'd stepped right off a runway for a hipster fashion show. The only thing that clashed with his outfit was the large sports bag slung over his shoulder. He appeared to be in his mid-20s, but his skin was so smooth, he could have been ageless. And his resemblance to me was unmistakable. Apollo? I said, my voice cracking when I said his name. Dad? Chapter 3.
You called, and I came, he said, as if he hadn't ignored my call every other time I'd tried. From what I heard, you're in a bit of a bind, aren't you?
I stared at him, shocked that he was here. I knew he was my father, but it was difficult to actually believe it now that he was standing in front of me, mainly because he appeared to be only a few years older than me. He could have blended in with the college kids who hung out in the city, minus the unearthly radiance that would make him stand out from them all. Being here with him now, I had no idea what to say. This was the first time I'd ever been face to face with my father. I had so many questions I wanted to ask him. Why did he desert my mom when he learned she was pregnant? Why didn't he tell her the truth about who he was? Why didn't he want to be in our lives? Why didn't he feel the need to let me know that I was a demigod? And why didn't he care about ever getting to know me? I suspected I already knew the answer. It was because he was a god, and family and relationships didn't have the same meanings to gods as they did to mortals. Still, I wanted to hear him say it. No apology could ever take back the years of him being gone, but it would have been better than nothing. But I swallowed down my questions, trying to get a hold of myself. I hadn't called Apollo here so we could have a heart-to-heart. I called him here because we needed his help, and we needed it now. Thank you for coming. I stood straighter, finally finding my voice again. We need to go to Kerberos as quickly as possible so we can help Blake fight off Ethan and bring Medusa's head back to Earth. I tried to run in there the moment they disappeared, but Chris and Danielle stopped me. They said we needed a plan. So, I thought you might be able to help.
Smart move not running straight into that portal, he said, glancing at it in distaste. You would have been in for quite the shock when you crossed through.
We know it's dangerous for mortals to go into Kerberos, Danielle said. But what about gods? What would happen if you went into Kerberos to bring back Medusa's head?
I twisted around to look at her, shocked. We hadn't discussed asking Apollo to go into Kerberos for us. It made sense, of course. He had a better shot at surviving in there than we did. But it seemed presumptuous to ask him for such a huge favor.
Although it wouldn't really be a favor, would it? He needed the Titans to stay in Kerberos just as much as we did. I didn't know what the Titans would do to the Olympians if they escaped and regained power, but I doubted it would be good.
You're right that if I could enter Kerberos, I would have an easier time retrieving Medusa's head than the three of you would, Apollo said. But unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately for me, the primordial deities are the only gods who can enter Kerberos. They can cross dimensions without needing to use a portal. No other gods can do that, including the Olympians or the Titans. The portal is weak enough right now that most creatures who reach the entrance can cross through, but their auras aren't anywhere close to as strong as a god's. No gods will be able to pass through until the summer solstice, when the portal is open completely. So my crossing into Kerberos to retrieve Medusa's head for you is not an option.
I almost thanked him for offering if he were able to, but I stopped myself, because he hadn't actually said he would have done it if he could. He'd just said it would have been easier for him to do than it would be for us. It wasn't the same thing.
So then we'll go through ourselves, I said instead. Like I tried to do the minute Ethan and Blake disappeared through the portal.
Your friends were right in stopping you, Apollo said. And you were right in calling me for help.
I almost didn't, I muttered, unable to meet his eyes. You hadn't come any other time I asked for help. I didn't think it would work this time either.
I didn't come those other times, because while you may have thought you needed my help, you didn't truly need it.
He held his gaze with mine, watching me closely.
Mortal parents nowadays do everything for their children, but I am not immortal, and you are not a human child. You're a demigod. And you must know that the relationships that gods have with our children cannot be compared to mortal relationships. We watch out for our children from afar, and it's assumed that our children know that we are keeping an eye on them. But we expect them to fend for themselves. It's the best way that you can grow, so you can become the strongest version of yourself as possible. We only interfere if it's absolutely necessary.
I thought it sounded like an archaic and aloof parenting method. But then again, Apollo was thousands of years old. And as he stood there in front of us, his skin so bronze that it appeared to glow with the light of the sun itself, I couldn't forget that while he was my father, he was also a god. Our relationship would never be normal. But I still wished things could have been different between us. I was afraid to tell him that, though, because I had a feeling he would just tell me there was no changing the way things were. And anyway, we had more important issues to discuss. Since every moment we spent here was time lost going after Ethan in Kerberos. Since you're here now, you must want to help us, I said instead. Right?
Correct.
He removed the sports bag from his shoulder and placed it at his feet.
The three of you are right that your best course of action is to enter the portal to Kerberos to take back Medusa's head. You're also right that going in there without the appropriate knowledge and tools would be unwise.
so I've come to help you solve both of those problems.
Great.
Chris rubbed his hands together and glanced down at the bag.
If this is anything like the mint Zeus gave me to amp up my power so I could fly the yacht over Charybdis, then I bet it's gonna be good.
I assure you, what's in that bag is far sleeker than a mint.
Apollo scrunched his nose, as if Zeus's gift appalled him.
But before I present your gifts to you, I need to warn you. Kerberos is a realm accessible from Earth, but it's not actually a part of Earth. It's part of a different dimension. Your elemental powers are linked to the earthly dimension. Therefore, you won't be able to access your abilities while you're in Kerberos.
What?
Chris's mouth dropped open.
Without our powers, how are we supposed to fight? You're descendants of gods, and Nicole is a demigod,
Apollo said.
Fighting is in your blood. Unfortunately, most of your kind has become weak in the past century, growing comfortable in a time of peace and safety. But as you've seen from your training, you pick up on the skills of combat faster than a human ever could. You can do this. Nevertheless, Kerberos is a deadly place for mortals who have only been training for a few months, which is why I brought you each a gift that will help you while you're there. But before I present them to you, I must ask you one important question.
He paused, taking time to look each of us straight in the eye. I fidgeted under his gaze, but I didn't break eye contact with him. I was strong, and I wanted him to know that. He nodded, apparently satisfied, and continued.
Now that you know your powers won't work in Kerberos, do you still plan on making this journey?
Chapter 4. Yes. I didn't hesitate. Blake's in there with Ethan. And with who knows what other monsters. We can't just do nothing. Plus, we need Medusa's head. We have to go in there. We don't have a choice.
I expected you would say that, Apollo said. I've observed mortals enough to know that they'll gladly enter hell to save the ones they love, as you're planning on doing now. But your friends don't have the same connection to Blake that you do. Are they willing to risk themselves for him as well?
Of course we are.
Chris clenched his fists, looking ready to fight.
We're all in this together.
Plus, if we don't get Medusa's head, the whole world's going to hell anyway,
Danielle added.
So yes, we're all going. I'd expected you would say that, but I had to check.
Apollo kneeled down to the bag and unzipped it. He reached inside and pulled out something I recognized instantly. The golden sword of Athena.
First things first. I thought you would need this,
he said, holding the sword out to Danielle.
I dropped by the training center on my way here to pick it up. Why did you leave it there in the first place?
We were only coming here to test out using Medusa's head on the baby Cyclops, she said. It was supposed to be easy. We didn't want to risk our weapon scaring the Cyclops before we lured him into the cave.
Whose idea was that?
Apollo asked.
Ethan's,
Chris said in disgust.
I'm sure I don't need to remind you to be careful about who you trust.
Apollo passed the sword to Danielle, who smiled the moment she wrapped her fingers around the handle.
This sword is yours,
he reminded her.
Your ancestor Aphrodite enchanted it into that block of ice for thousands of years, waiting for the day when you would claim it as your own. You should keep it nearby, always.
Yes, she said, still holding the sword straight in front of her.
I will. In addition, I brought a belt and a sheath, since you can't march around Kerberos without a way to carry your sword. He removed that from the bag and handed it to her. She fastened the belt around her waist and placed the sword inside the sheath, looking every bit a fierce warrior, ready to fight.
Much better,
Apollo nodded.
And now, Chris's present.
He knelt back down to the bag and pulled out a golden miniature harp. It had a strap around it, presumably so a person could carry it on his or her back.
A golden lyre,
he explained, running his fingers over its strings.
I've put an enchantment on it. When it's played, the person playing it will have powers similar to a siren. When they speak, whoever is listening will believe and do whatever is asked of them.
Chris eyed the instrument skeptically, not reaching out to take it.
And you're giving that to me?
He asked.
I mean, it's a great gift, but I don't know how to play any instruments, especially not a lyre. Your experience won't be an issue,
Apollo said.
As I told you, this lyre is enchanted. You'll be able to play it the moment you lay your hands upon it.
Cool. Chris's eyes lit up, and he reached for the instrument.
I'll try it now.
Apollo frowned and held it out of Chris's reach.
The enchantment will only last for as long as the lyre remains in tune,
he said.
Each time you play it, it will become closer and closer to getting out of tune. So you must be careful to play it only when necessary. That makes sense,
Chris said.
How many times can I play it before it goes out of tune? I can't say for sure, since it depends on how long you play it each time you use it,
Apollo said.
Therefore, I recommend that once your subject has done as you've asked of them, you stop playing as soon as you can. You should also know that it will only work on creatures that can understand English, and that it won't work on gods, as they're too strong to cave into its powers. So if you come across any animals or gods, you'll have to use another means to fight them.
Got it, Chris said. And this time, when he reached for the lyre, Apollo allowed him to take it. I was slightly jealous when I looked at it. It was beautiful, gleaming as gold as Danielle's sword. Even the strings were made of gold. I itched to play it myself, but Apollo was giving it to Chris, not me. And I had to respect that.
Thank you.
Chris strapped the instrument to his back and stood proudly, looking Apollo straight in the eye.
I'll do everything in my power to protect your daughter when we're in Kerberos. I promise. I appreciate it,
Apollo said, which was probably the most fatherly thing he'd said since arriving here.
But from what I've seen of Nicole's fighting, she's able to protect herself just fine. And her fighting skills will be even more enhanced with the gift I brought for her today.
Then he reached back into the bag and pulled out the most perfect gift for me. Chapter 5. A golden bow, I gasped upon seeing it, amazed by its beauty. It was so shiny and delicately carved that it made the iron bow I'd been using until now look plain in comparison. It's beautiful. Thank you.
This isn't just any bow and arrow set.
He pulled out the matching arrows and placed them into the quiver, 6 of them in all. Like the bow, they were gold, except for the tips, which were a clear, sparkling crystal.
These crystal arrows are exceptionally rare. They will never miss their intended target, as long as that target is in the shooter's range of vision.
Never? I asked. Even if something else gets in the way?
If that were to happen, they will divert the obstacle and hit their target,
he confirmed.
But you must use them wisely, because the power of the crystal will only work once. Afterward, the crystal will dim, its power gone forever.
He handed the bow to me,
setting it in my hands.
You must be selective about when you use the arrows, since you will only get 6 perfect shots.
I will be, I told him, and with that assurance, he let go of the bow. But even after the magic of the crystal is gone, I can still use the arrows, right?
If you're able to retrieve the arrows, then yes, they're reusable,
he said, handing the quiver with the 6 arrows to me. I fastened it around my back, tucking the bow in there as well. With the weapon, I felt much more prepared to enter Kerberos. Thank you for coming when I called today, I told Apollo, not sure what else to say to him. It was strange, despite his being my father. The two of us were still practically strangers. It means a lot.
As I said, you needed me, so I came,
he said.
But remember that no matter how much you might need assistance in Kerberos, I will not be able to come to your aid while you're there. Not only am I unable to enter the portal, I'll also be unable to hear your call. Once you've crossed through to the other dimension, you'll be on your own.
Except we'll have our gifts from you, so we won't be truly alone, I said, managing a small smile. Your gifts are extremely generous, and we'll use them wisely. We won't let you down.
I'll count on it,
he said.
As will the rest of the world.
I took a deep breath, hit again with the reality of how the world as I knew it would no longer exist if we failed to succeed in this mission. We had no other option. We must succeed. The world was depending on it. And given the fact that we had less than a week until the spring equinox, we didn't have long to do it.
One last thing before you leave, Danielle said,
and Apollo looked at her to continue.
Darius Hypatia and Jason are waiting back at Darius's for us to return from testing Medusa's head on the Cyclops.
I don't know how long we'll be in Kerberos, but I suspect it might be long enough that they'll begin to worry, especially if they look for us and find us missing. Is there any way to get word to them about what happened to us and where we went? At least that way they won't waste time searching for us on Earth, and they'll be able to figure out what to tell our families.
Yes,
Apollo nodded.
I can certainly manage that. No, since my task here is complete and you have your gifts, I must be on my way. Goodbye, and good luck.
He looked at me when he said that last part. Then the glowing orb of light surrounded him again, and when it flashed out, he was gone. Chapter 6. I stared at the place where Apollo, my father, had been standing, thinking about the conversation we'd just had. Wow, I finally said, my hand still wrapped around the golden bow. That really just happened, didn't it? I finally met my father.
It did,
Danielle said.
But you can think more about it later, because right now, we have to enter Kerberos.
She glanced at her watch, concern crossing over her features.
It's been half an hour since Ethan and Blake went through the portal. Hopefully they didn't get too far.
How far could they get in 30 minutes? Chris asked. All we have to do is catch up with them, fight off Ethan, take back Medusa's head, and come back home.
We can't just fight off Ethan, I said, staring straight ahead at the muddy portal. We now know that he'll do anything to get his sister back, even align himself with the Titans. We can't risk him coming after us again. Remember, he put the gray energy in our drinks before we fought Medusa. If he hadn't done that, Kate would probably still be here today. She's gone because of him. And Blake's in danger now, too. We have no other choice. As soon as we find Ethan, we have to kill him.
Agreed, Danielle said. In fact, if you didn't have the heart to do it, I planned on doing it myself.
And I didn't want to be the first one to say it, but I was thinking it too,
Chris said. Good. I gripped the strap of my quiver, glad that they supported me. And while I couldn't speak for Blake, I had a feeling that he would agree with us too. If he hadn't killed Ethan already. In which case, I hoped he'd already grabbed Medusa's head and was on his way back to Earth now. Unfortunately, Ethan had told us that the Titans were expecting his arrival, so I doubted escape would be that easy. We had no idea what was waiting on the other side. Just looking at the portal, the murky, muddy sludge that swirled on the cave wall in front of us, chilled me to the bone. This portal reeked of evil, and we were about to step right into it.
"So, are we gonna do this or what?"
Chris asked, although from the tremble in his voice, I could tell that he was scared too.
"We need to stop thinking about it and do it," Danielle said. "It's like a band-aid. It's better to not think about it too much and rip it off. We have to do the same thing with walking through this portal. Don't think too much about it. Just do it."
"You make it sound like a Nike commercial,"
Chris laughed. But despite his joke, I couldn't find humor in the situation. "We'll hold on to each other when we go through, and we won't let go." I held out my hands, and they both took them, their grips tight. "Ready?" I asked, looking first at Chris and then at Danielle.
"No," she said. "I don't think I could ever feel ready for this."
"Me either," I agreed. "But thank you for stopping me from running in there immediately. You were right. We needed a plan. Now, with Apollo's gifts, we're as ready as we could ever be, considering that not even the gods know what to expect on the other side of that portal." Then, holding Chris's hand on one side and Danielle's hand on the other, the three of us stepped through the portal to Kerberos. Chapter 7. I was prepared for the roller coaster, stomach-flipping sensation I got whenever I walked through a portal. But I should have guessed that this muddy portal to a hell dimension wouldn't be like anything I'd experienced before. It suffocated me as I fell through, as if I were drowning in quicksand, the sludge covering every inch of my skin. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't move. I was trapped. We should have arrived on the other side by now. What if this was Kerberos? A constant feeling of drowning in a sludgy nothingness. If this were all there was, we would never find Blake. We might not even be able to get out of here ourselves. Just as I started to fear that this was all there would be, my feet hit solid ground again. I sucked in a breath full of air. Humid, sticky air, but air nonetheless. I hadn't been able to feel Chris and Danielle's hands while we were in the portal, but now that we were through, they gripped mine tighter than they had before we'd left.
"Well, that was different," Chris said.
"If by different you mean terrifying, then yes."
Danielle shuddered and let go of my hand, rubbing her palms over her jeans.
"I never want to do that again."
I didn't think she needed reminding that we would have to do it again when we returned home. Instead, I looked around, observing our surroundings. We stood on a dirt path at the edge of a dark forest. The path split into two. One way led into the dense, tall trees, and the other led to a towering mountain. Its peak so high that it rose above the clouds. The sky here was different from our sky. It was a deep, haunted amber, as if the sun were dying. It was also hot. A sticky, wet heat that clung onto every inch of my body, covering my skin like a wet blanket. Sweat already dripped down the sides of my face. Something buzzed by my ear. A fly, I hoped. And I swatted it away. But there was more buzzing, and I looked down at my leg as a giant wasp, twice the size of any wasp I'd ever seen on Earth, stung me.
Ow! I kicked the wasp off me and pointed at it, flailing around to avoid it landing on me again. That thing just stung me. It flew off my leg and landed on Danielle's arm. She took a sharp breath inward and hissed. I guessed it stung her, too.
Kill it,
she squealed, shaking it off her arm, and jumping around to avoid the flying insect.
Now.
With what? Chris asked. It needs to land on something for us to kill it.
It buzzed around us some more, and then flew away. Once it did, I finally relaxed. Chris laughed, and I glared at him, clenching my fists to my sides.
It's not funny, I said, flinching as another fly, or wasp, buzzed past my ear.
It kind of is,
he said, laughing again.
We've fought some of the most terrifying monsters on the planet, and the two of you are screaming like little girls because of a wasp.
He waved a hand near his ear. I assumed because of another fly/wasp, and then he flinched, grabbing his hand.
Damn,
he cursed, letting go and shaking out his fingers.
That did hurt.
See? I smiled, glad that he'd experienced getting stung by one of those monstrous insects, too.
How do you both feel?
Danielle asked.
The bites feel normal, right? Nothing cold or hot in the place where you got stung?
It itches, I said, scratching the sting on my leg.
But no, nothing like that.
Why? You don't think those things are poisonous, do you?
I have no idea, she said. They're not from Earth, so I don't know what to expect. But I don't think they're poisonous. My cousin's allergic to bees, and last summer she was stung for the first time while we were hanging out by the pool. She said that it felt like there was cold venom traveling through her body from the place where she got stung. 10 minutes later, her whole body broke out into hives, and we rushed her to the doctor, where they gave her medicine that stopped the reaction. I don't know if it would feel like that for us, since we don't know anything about these wasps. But as long as the bites feel normal, then I think we're in the clear.
Good, I said, fanning my face in a hopeless attempt to cool off. After everything we've gone through so far, it would be lame to die from an insect bite. Another one flew past my arm, and I skirted away, not wanting to get stung again. Chris jumped as well, which I could only assume was because of another wasp. If these things don't stay away from us, they're going to drive me insane, I said, flinching as it flew past my ear.
We've only been here for a few minutes, and we're already being driven insane by insects.
Chris shook his head.
No wonder people go mad after a few days of being here.
We won't be here for a few days, I said, swatting another bug off my neck. Because we're finding Blake, taking back Medusa's head, and then we're getting out of here. I looked down at the paths, searching for some sort of clue of where Ethan and Blake had gone. Footprints, or something. Blake should have guessed that we would come after him, and he was smart enough to leave a trail for us. But there was nothing. Both paths looked like they hadn't been used in days. How were we supposed to know where to go? Splitting up wasn't an option, since one of us couldn't go off on our own. We had to stick together. But if we took the wrong path, we would lose any chance of catching up with them.
Look, Danielle said. Up there.
I glanced up at where she was pointing, catching sight of two huge orange birds. Pterodactyls, soaring toward the mountain. Each one held someone in their claws. Even though they were so far away that I couldn't make out details, one had dark hair and the other was blonde. Blake and Ethan. I reached for my bow, pulling a crystal arrow through the string. My first instinct was to aim for Blake's pterodactyl to get him away from Ethan. But I couldn't do that. If the pterodactyl dropped him, it would kill him. I had to aim for Ethan.
Ethan was likely holding on to Medusa's head, so if I killed him in the air, Blake could grab the head once the pterodactyls dropped them off and come find us. Of course, I had no idea where the pterodactyls would drop them off, but we could figure that out later. I zeroed in on Ethan, steadying my bow and preparing to shoot. I didn't know how the crystal arrows worked. Hopefully they would magically know where I was aiming to get a perfect shot. But before I let the arrow loose, both pterodactyls rose above the dark storm clouds, disappearing from sight. Not knowing if they would come back below the clouds again, I shot the arrow anyway, since I'd been looking at Ethan a moment earlier. Apollo said that the arrows only worked when the target was in sight, but Ethan had been in sight seconds earlier. If I'd acted, instead of stopping to think, I would have had him. I couldn't make the same mistake again, but the arrow was already gone. So I held my breath as it soared up into the air, hoping it would still work.
"Who were you aiming for?"
Chris asked, staring at where the arrow had disappeared into the clouds. "Ethan," I said, wiping beads of sweat off my brow. I don't know if it hit him, because he was already in the clouds when I shot. But even if it did, and he's dead, the pterodactyls won't let them down until they've reached their destinations.
Pterodactyls?
Danielle raised an eyebrow.
Those weren't dinosaurs.
Yeah, they were. I looked at her like she was crazy. What else could they be?
Dragons, she said simply. I waited for her to laugh, since she must be joking. But she didn't. So I laughed instead.
Dragons? I repeated, since that was ridiculous. No, they were pterodactyls. You know, flying dinosaurs.
I know what pterodactyls are.
She rolled her eyes as if I were the idiot for doubting her knowledge of extinct species.
Dinosaurs are one of my favorite subjects in fifth grade science. That and plate tectonics. But anyway, pterodactyls have pointy heads with beaks, like a pelican without the neck pouch. And their arms are connected to their wings. Dragons have fuller heads with no beaks, and their arms are separate from their wings. Those creatures we saw were certainly the size of a pterodactyl, but their features were those of a dragon.
But dragons don't exist. I lowered my bow, looking up at the sky in wonder. They're not even part of mythology. They're fictional, right?
I don't know, Danielle shrugged. I know a lot about science, so I know those weren't pterodactyls. But I don't know every detail about mythology. I mean, I knew everything we needed to know for school, but that was it. I didn't do any further reading.
If Kate were here, she would know,
Chris said. I looked down at the dirt path, blinking away tears. I was trying not to think about it much, but I couldn't help remembering what Ethan had said to us before disappearing into Kerberos. He'd said that Kate was dead, and that we were pathetic for hoping there might be a way to reverse Medusa's curse. I was trying not to think about it, because I refused to accept it. Kate was part of our team. She was the first friend I'd made when I moved to Kinsley. She'd reached out and got me up to speed on everything when I discovered I was a witch. She couldn't be gone. She just couldn't. She would know, I finally said, pulling myself out of my spiraling dark thoughts. After all, we couldn't do anything to save Kate right now. But we could save Blake. But it doesn't matter what those creatures are. The important thing is that we saw them flying toward the mountain. So we have a general idea of where they're heading.
I don't suppose that any pterodactyls or dragons or whatever they were will be stopping by to pick us up, too,
Chris asked.
Nope.
Danielle dug her heel into the dirt path and turned toward the mountain.
Ethan told us that the Titans were expecting his arrival. so I would guess they sent those dragons to him as transportation up the mountain. Which means we only have one option. We have to climb up the mountain ourselves.
Chapter 8. I stared up at the mountain, hopelessness crashing down on me like a ton of bricks. How were we supposed to make it all the way up there? And how would we catch up on Ethan and Blake's head start, since they were flown up there by dragons? We'll never make it in time, I said. A wasp buzzed around me, landing on my arm, and I didn't bother brushing it away until after it stung me.
What do you want to do then? Chris asked. Turn around and go back to Earth?
No. I sighed and glanced back at the muddy portal. If we'd just been more careful and not trusted Ethan, none of this would have happened. And we wouldn't have to be in Kerberos at all. But we were here now, and there was no turning back. So I straightened, waved a wasp away from my ear, and gazed back up at the mountain. We have to try, I said. So we need to stop standing around and start heading up that mountain.
That's what I like to hear, Chris nodded at me. And for the record, I wasn't actually considering going back. But I knew that if I said it out loud, it would knock you back into your senses.
It worked. I forced a small smile to show that I appreciated his effort. I guess we'll just walk toward the mountain. Hopefully we'll find a path up when we get there. How long do you think it'll take? I looked back and forth between them, hoping that one of them had a general idea.
Don't look at me.
Danielle held her hands out.
I'm not really the mountain climbing type.
Maybe a day or two, Chris said. Or three?
I don't know. It depends on a lot of things. If there's a clear trail, how easily we're able to find food and water, etc. We're all in good shape, so that won't be an issue. But as for the other things, there's no way for me to know for sure.
If we can find food and water, I said, defeat prickling my skin once more. On Earth, we would probably be able to, but this is a prison world. I wouldn't be surprised if there was no food or water on the mountain just to torture us. Talking about water made me realize that I was getting thirsty. What was the last thing I had to drink? The two glasses of water I'd downed after waking up from my failed attempt to heal Kate. That was hours ago. Danielle grunted and threw her hands down, and I whipped my head around to look at her, surprised by her sudden outburst. What happened? I asked. More wasp bites?
No.
She huffed again, wiping her forehead with her wrist.
It's so humid here that I thought maybe I could pull the water from the air so we could have something to drink. But Apollo was right. Our powers don't work here.
That's too bad, Chris said. This would be a lot easier if I could fly us up the mountain.
He held his hands out and stared forward, his forehead scrunched in concentration. Nothing happened.
Yep,
he said, lowering his hands to his sides.
Didn't work.
I didn't doubt them, but I had to try to. So I placed a hand over one of my itchy wasp bites, closed my eyes, and searched the air for white energy. There was nothing. I didn't even hit a brick wall. It was just empty. Blank space. A vacuum of nothingness. My element was gone. Nope. I opened my eyes and removed my hand from my arm. Mine don't work either.
Then we have only one option.
Danielle stared forward, her eyes glinting with determination.
Let's climb that mountain as fast as possible, find Blake and Medusa's head, and bring them back home.
Chapter 9. Besides the occasional insect bites and stings, the walk to the base of the mountain was easy, since the path led us straight there. I kept expecting something to jump out at us, but the area around us was barren, and I didn't see any other creatures nearby. But I was still ready to grab my bow at a moment's notice, just in case.
"Do you hear that?"
Danielle asked, stopping in her tracks. "What?" I asked, and she shushed me, which made me instinctively press my lips together.
"Running water," she said. "It's faint, but it's there. Listen."
I stopped to listen, and then I heard it. A light trickling of water from higher up on the mountain. Hearing it made me thirstier than ever. "If we can hear it, it can't be far," I said, picking up the pace. "Come on." The path up the mountain was rocky and steep, but since we were all in shape from our intense training, it didn't prove too difficult. We wouldn't be able to keep this pace up all the way to the top, but for now, the excitement of knowing there was water ahead kept us going. We finished stumbling up a particularly steep boulder when something growled up ahead. An oversized, snarling fox. Its tail was down, and its lips were pulled back, looking ready to attack.
"Whoa there!"
Chris held his hands out and stepped back.
"Relax, buddy. We're not trying to hurt you. We just want to get up this mountain."
The fox growled again, and then it ran forward, jumping up and launching itself in the air so it appeared to be flying toward us. Danielle's sword was out in an instant, and she sliced the fox in half. The cut was so clean that there was barely any blood. Just two pieces of the animal, each with a gaping hole on one end, splayed on the ground. It was only after a few seconds that the blood began seeping out and pooling around the corpse. I glanced around to see if any other animals were around, but we seemed to be in the clear.
"Well, that was different," I said, staring at the remains of the fox. I didn't know much about foxes, but I'd always assumed they were shy. I definitely didn't think they attacked people. So why had it attacked us like that?
It was bigger than any fox I'd ever seen on Earth, but it wasn't big enough that it should feel confident attacking three people. I had no answer, so we continued on our way, remaining alert in case anything else tried to take us by surprise as well. We only made it a few steps before another fox wandered out from behind a tree. It spotted us and snarled, its tail grazing the ground, just like the first one. Then another one joined it, and another one behind that one. They all stared at us, blocking our path. Three of them, and three of us. At least this time it would be a fair fight.
"Come on," Chris goaded them, pulling his knife out of his boot. "You want to fight? Even after what just happened to your little friend?"
They all ran forward at the same time, their tails flying behind them as they jumped toward us. I strung a crystal arrow through my bow and shot it straight through one of the fox's hearts. Danielle sliced the fox in front of her clean in half, and I looked over at Chris in time to see him struggling with the last one. It was on him, and his shoulder dripped blood. But I breathed out in relief when he pulled his knife out of the fox's chest. The dead animal dropped to the ground. "Are you hurt?" I asked, running toward him to check for injuries. He shrugged me off, although I couldn't miss the bloodied holes in his shirt near his shoulder. "You are," I said, pointing to the blood. "How bad is it?"
"It's just a scratch."
He rolled his shoulder around, and since he was able to move it, I relaxed.
"I'll be fine."
I nodded, since without being able to use my power, I couldn't have done anything if the injury was life-threatening. "First thing to do when we find water is to get it cleaned up," I said. "It might just be a scratch,
but you don't want it to get infected.
Still trying to heal, even when you don't have your powers?
He joked. I might as well try to help with what I can do, I said.
First thing I'm going to do when we find water is to take a long drink of it, he said. Then we can clean up this scratch.
He dropped his hand from his shoulder and glanced around the clearing.
Hopefully we don't come across any more crazy foxes, he said. They're really slowing down our progress.
Danielle joined us, handing something to me. Here's your arrow, she said, and I took it from her, examining it. The previously clear crystal was now murky and gray.
Be careful about how you use the ones that remain, she added. Use this one if you think you can hit your target without magical help.
I know, I said, placing the arrow back into my quiver. It felt different from the others, like it was devoid of life. What would happen if I used it? Without access to my powers, would I be able to shoot as accurately as I could on Earth? I would have gotten it myself after I checked to make sure Chris was okay.
I'm sure you would have, Danielle said. I was just trying to help.
Oh, I said, still not used to this side of her. Okay, thanks. We walked for a few more minutes in silence, listening to the trickling water get closer and closer. Finally, we pulled ourselves up over another boulder and saw it, a stream up ahead, flowing straight through the path.
Race you to the water, Chris said, jumping forward and getting a head start on both of us.
Hey, I yelled up at him. That wasn't... I was cut off when a lion jumped onto the path from a ledge above, landing right in front of the water. I skidded to a stop behind Chris, not daring to move. I didn't look behind to check on Danielle, but judging from the fact that I couldn't hear her footsteps, she'd stopped walking too. The lion sat down and stared at us, not moving. Its eerie stillness was far scarier than the fox's snarling. Its eyes were scarily intelligent, as if it had been expecting us.
Back away slowly,
Chris whispered, taking my hand and pulling me back with him.
No sudden movements.
We stopped when we reached Danielle, who was frozen, her eyes wide. I didn't want to use another crystal arrow, but I wasn't sure I had a choice. I didn't want to know what would happen if I shot the regular arrow and missed. Surely the lion would attack. If I used a crystal arrow now, I would only have three left. I was using them quickly, perhaps too quickly. I needed to save some for later. But if I didn't use one now, there might not be a later for me to save them for. One perfect shot was all it would take. I strung the crystal arrow through my bow and focused on the lion's heart, ready to shoot. But then another lion jumped down to join him, followed by one more. I swallowed, looking around in panic. I didn't have enough arrows for all of these lions. Chris's lyre couldn't do anything since the lions were animals, and it would be too dangerous to fight them with our knives. Danielle had the golden sword, but she was only one person. She couldn't take on three lions at once. How are we supposed to fight these creatures without our powers? They would slaughter us. At the very least, they would injure one of us to the point where we wouldn't be able to make it up the rest of the mountain. Finally, one more lion jumped down to stand in front of them. He was double the size of the others, and his coat was pure gold. Like the others, he stared at us with intelligent eyes, although he didn't attack. It was more like he and his pack were keeping guard, blocking us from the water and from continuing up the path. If we kept running into wild animals, we wouldn't make it up the mountain. What do we do? I whispered, making no sudden movements. Even with our weapons, we can't beat 4 lions without our powers.
That's not just any lion, Danielle said, her sword up and ready. It's the Nemean lion. We had a test last semester about Hercules' 12 labors, and the lion was one of them. His golden fur makes him immune to weapons. The only way Hercules was able to kill him was by strangling the lion to death with his own hands.
Is it immune to the golden sword and the crystal arrows? Chris asked.
I don't know, Danielle said, taking a step backward. But for now, he and the others don't seem to want to attack us, just to stop us from going any further. If we try to use our weapons against him, and they don't work,
then we'll provoke him into attacking, I finished her thought. And the other lions as well.
Exactly, she said. And even with the golden sword and crystal arrows, I doubt that a fight between the three of us, 3 lions, and the Nemean lion would end well. I nodded, since I'd already come to that same conclusion.
So what do we do?
Chris asked.
Turn around and lose even more time?
I stared back at the lions. They watched us closely, as if waiting to see our next move. So I stepped forward. The Nemean lion took a step forward as well, his eyes level with mine. He looked ready to pounce. I took a step back, and while it was hard to say for sure, it seemed like the lion nodded, as if he was telling us that if we retreated, he and the others wouldn't hurt us. I don't like this any more than you do, I told Chris. But we're not going to be any use to anyone if we're dead. And this mountain's huge. This can't be the only path up. There has to be a safer way.
For once, you're thinking sensibly, Danielle agreed.
I rolled my eyes, figuring her comment needed no response, and the three of us took a few more cautious steps backward. The further away from the lions we got, the more they relaxed. They sat down, watching us, and the Nemean lion licked his paw. It was hard to say for sure, but I was pretty sure that he smiled. They were letting us go. Relief flooded my veins at the realization that we wouldn't have to fight them, and I breathed easily for the first time since the lion had jumped into our path. We moved further and further away, and as much as I hated running away from a fight, I knew we'd made the right decision. After all, we were no use to anyone if we were dead. Not wanting to test our luck any further, we finally turned around, not looking back as we hurried down the mountain. Chapter 10. The lions didn't follow us. No more foxes jumped out at us either. And once we reached the bottom of the mountain, we sat down on a stone to take a breather and decide what to do next. I looked around the dismal brown landscape, trying to get a better idea of our surroundings. The dirt path we'd taken from the portal was the only obvious way up the mountain. All around the path was barren wasteland full of sharp, jagged boulders. We might be able to trek through them, but it wouldn't be easy, and it would be nearly impossible at night. But what choice did we have? The path was too dangerous. We had to break from it to find an alternate way up the mountain. We might as well get going. I jumped off the rock and brushed off my palms. We're not getting anywhere by sitting here doing nothing.
We should have taken the bodies of those foxes that we killed on the mountain,
Chris said, not moving from his seat on the rock. A fly buzzed around his ear, and he didn't bother waving it away.
At least then we would have something to eat.
My stomach growled, and I wrapped my arms around it to silence it. Why hadn't Apollo thought to give us some food along with our weapons? We had a while before keeling over from starvation, but our strength wouldn't last forever if we didn't find something to eat.
Do you know how to cook a fox?
Danielle shot back at Chris.
how to skin it, and how to know which parts of it to eat. And what about starting a fire? Do you know how to do that without a lighter?
I have my knife.
He held it up, the blade glinting in the rays of the dying sun.
We could have figured the rest of that stuff out. It's better than starving to death.
We're not going to starve to death, I said. Although I had a feeling that I was trying to convince myself of that as much as I was trying to convince him. And we're not going back up that path. The lions might not let us go twice. And who knows what other animals might try to attack. We have to find another way. Come on. I stepped off the path, maneuvering myself along the cragged rocks. Chris and Danielle followed in my footsteps, saying nothing. We stumbled along for 10 minutes. Our progress was slower than it had been on the path, but at least it was progress. Danielle used the golden sword as a walking stick. Chris and I didn't have that luxury, and there were no sticks anywhere near us, so we had to make our way on our own. So far, I'd only lost my footing once. I panted as I continued on, cursing the lions for stopping us right before we'd reached water. Couldn't they have waited until after we had something to drink? I suppose that would be too much to expect from a hellish prison world. To distract myself from my thirst, I kept glancing at the mountain, hoping to spot another path. Everything I'd seen so far was too steep to reasonably climb, but we still had a while to go, so I tried not to lose hope. I turned my gaze ahead and saw something strange in the distance. A fuzzy gray blob about the size of a human. "Do you all see that?" I asked, stopping to point at the shadowy blob. "I'm not hallucinating, am I?" Danielle looked at where I was pointing and raised her sword.
"If you're seeing a shadowy blur that's coming closer to us at a speed we could never outrun, then no, you're not hallucinating," she said.
"What is that thing?"
"I don't know."
I pulled out a crystal arrow and strung it through my bow, even though I had no idea where to aim to injure the thing up ahead. So I removed the crystal arrow and took out the used arrow instead, shooting it at the blob. The arrow disappeared into it. I stood there, transfixed, trying to see where my arrow could have landed, but it was like it had become part of the shadow itself. The shadow stopped about 20 feet ahead of us, and in less time than it took to blink, a person stood in its place. A guy a few years older than us, to be exact, dressed in black jeans, a leather jacket, and combat boots. He had dark hair, and a face so perfectly sculpted that he would make even Jason Flynn, one of the most famous movie stars in the world, pale in comparison. He carried a small black pack on his back and my arrow in his hand. But that was all he seemed to have on him. I strung a crystal arrow through my bow and pointed it at his heart. Danielle held out her sword, and Chris had his lyre ready. I should have shot the guy, or thing, or whatever he was, with the crystal arrow immediately after he shifted to human form. But he didn't make a move toward us, so I held back. I didn't think that any creatures in Kerberos could be trusted. But if this guy wanted to kill us, wouldn't he have done it by now? Especially since I'd already tried shooting him once.
"You can lower your weapons."
He tossed my used arrow to the ground in front of my feet and held his hands out.
"I'm here to help you."
"Why should we trust you?" I remained focused on him and didn't make a move for the discarded arrow, ready to shoot the crystal arrow through his heart at a moment's notice.
"Do you have much of a choice?"
He smirked, as if he already knew the answer to the question.
"You're wandering around Kerberos with no idea where you're going. Since you're traversing the Badlands, and judging by the bite on Chris's shoulder, you've already discovered that wild animals block the fastest route up the mountain. I'm going to guess that you're searching for another way up, but you're looking in the wrong place. And even if you do discover the correct path, which I doubt you will on your own, the chances of you making it to the top of the mountain alive are slim at best. Which brings me to the reason why I'm here. To be your guide.
I stood there for a few seconds, processing everything he'd said. He couldn't be telling the truth, because no creature from Kerberos was on our side. Or at least, I didn't think they were. After all, they had every reason to want the portal to open, and we had every reason to want it closed, which made us enemies with everyone here. Whoever this guy was, there was no way he was here to help us. And if he thought he could trick us that easily, he was wrong.
How do you know my name?
Chris finally asked.
If you lower your weapons, I'll tell you,
he said. I glanced at Danielle, who, like me, made no move to lower her weapon.
No.
Danielle leveled her gaze with his, holding her ground.
How about this? As long as you stay where you are, we'll promise not to shoot you while you answer our questions.
Feisty.
The man smiled.
I like it.
She raised her sword, which only made his smile grow.
We know better than to trust anyone from Kerberos,
she said.
So go on. Tell us who you are and how you know Chris's name.
It's not just Chris's name I know,
he said.
I know yours too, Danielle. And yours, Nicole.
He looked at me when he said my name, his dark eyes sending chills down my spine.
And you're right not to trust anyone from Kerberos. Trusting anyone from here would be pretty stupid.
So then why do you expect us to trust you? I asked.
Because I'm not from Kerberos.
I waited for him to continue. When he didn't, I took the bait. Where are you from then? I asked, not having the patience for whatever game he was trying to play.
I am from Chaos itself,
he said. As if we should understand what that meant.
More specifically, I am Erebus, the primordial deity of darkness, sent here by Nyx to guide you through this prison world.
Chapter 11.
Why did Nyx send you?
Danielle narrowed her eyes, not looking like she believed a word he said.
Why wouldn't she just come here herself?
Excellent questions,
Erebus said.
And there are two reasons. First of all, there's an issue on another planet right now that needs Nyx's undivided attention. Don't bother asking for more information on that situation, because that's all I'm allowed to tell you. And secondly, I'm much more familiar with Kerberos than Nyx is. She doesn't spend much time here. She doesn't like it here very much. I, on the other hand, have no issues watching creatures suffer in the most gruesome ways imaginable, so I come here quite often, which makes me more suitable to be your guide.
If you like suffering so much, then why help us at all? I asked. Why not let the Titans escape and watch them destroy the Earth?
Would you believe me if I told you it was to make Nyx happy?
He asked.
No,
Danielle said, tightening her grip on her sword.
Why do you personally want to help us?
Fine.
He chuckled and held his hands up.
You're right. Making Nyx happy is a plus I get from helping you. But it isn't the reason why I'm helping you. The reason why is this. You mortals are so entertaining. It would be a shame to have you wiped out by the Titans. The technological advances that the mortals on Earth have created in such a short amount of time are incredible. You're close to making some remarkable discoveries about what exists beyond your planet. To have your race obliterated now would be hugely disappointing. Sure, it would be entertaining while it was happening, but the Titans would crush you so quickly. that it would be over before I could get any enjoyment from it even starting. Therefore, I'm taking Nyx's request to heart. I can't technically interfere in your mission, but I'll do what I can to guide you through Kerberos alive. Because while I know you don't want to admit it, without me, the three of you have no chance in hell. And I mean that quite literally, since Kerberos is worse than Hades itself.
Great, I said, still not lowering my bow. If you want to help us, create a portal to the top of that mountain so we can save Blake, grab Medusa's head, and get out of here.
I'm afraid I can't do that, he said.